Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Blog Talk Radio.
Contra Radio Network. Preparedness Radio. With your host, John Jeffers.
And good evening. John Jeffers here at the Contra Radio Network. Well, wanted to finish this show. We tried doing it Wednesday night. And of course, we did it Thursday night. And for some reason, everything just shut down. I have no idea. I see we have Porky Wheel, Northern Ireland, checking in. He's on the Facebook like page, the video feed. Welcome, my friend. Hope everything is doing well with your family. We never got a chance to finish the show. Have no idea what happened, but I can tell you this. Julie had the same issue on Saturday night. So maybe, on Saturday night, her show. Not this past Saturday, this, a week ago, last Saturday. Okay. Anyways, what we want to finish talking about, and I'm going to tell you something right now. Can't do the show by myself, not on this topic. We're going to need listener participation. So the call-in number is 516-453-9389. 516-453-9389. And the reason I'm doing that and putting it out there, because I'm not going to do a chat room tonight, because we need to have listener participation. Think of this, if you will, submitted for your approval, is this. Think of this as, say, training. Training in that, for example, you could play the role of the proper group leader or a team leader, and you have been tasked to go out and get a list of items that you need. Now, we're going to separate these into two time frames, both after the critical event. One, 2 weeks after the critical event, and the other time frame, say 3 months, 90 days after the critical event. Okay, because between the 2 week period and say the 3 month period, goals, lists, supplies, all that changes. Everything becomes much more clear when you're dealing in a situation such as that. So Tim was going crazy about it. I think we got Gary calling in. Hold on. Area code 318. Go ahead.
How you doing?
Hello.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. I thought we got cut off.
No. I was waiting to see what else you wanted to say other than hello. So.
I just kind of got tuned in, so I'm getting brought up to speed.
All right. No problem. We're just going over again the scenario situation that we're presenting as we try to finish the episode of Go Where and Get What. So
okay.
I know Tim called in from North Carolina, and he's been waiting to do this show for a while. Like I said, I don't know what happened last Thursday, but everything just shut down. So I figure the NSA didn't want me talking about it, so they just cut me off completely. A complete shutdown. Unbelievable. Never happened before. But we'll see if we can't get through it tonight. So part one is about 20, 22 minutes long. If you want to watch it, you can. Hope you will. And you could see what happened. Like 22 minutes into the episode, and beep, you get the dead sound. I don't know what happened. But Tim is back, and he wants to, yes, Tim, I want you to call back in because you started to talk about some really good places where to find things. For example, let's say you're a group leader, task your team to go out and acquire resources, whether it be medications, maybe food, water, maybe you didn't get prepped in time, maybe you didn't get all your preps to your area of operations or to your bug out location. So you need to go out and acquire more. Where do you go? Where would you go to get these items? That's what we're talking about. Now, you could make the list whatever it is you want to fit your scenario. And like I said, it would be better. Okay. I guess Tim will not be calling in, unfortunately. I wish he would. So think of this as training. Okay. And training in that you're going to have to put out your ideas to whoever. You got to share your ideas. You got this list. Where do we go? Where do I go to get this stuff? Where would I look? That kind of thing. Anyways, you know, one of the things that I remember Tim said last week, he says, you know, some of the interesting places to go, for example, to get some, you know, very basic. Hey, Stacy Mathis has joined us on the Facebook feed. I think she's a first timer. Hello, Stacy. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here. You know, one of the things that he did talk about was he said, you know, you should go check out school buses because most school buses, if not all, have first aid kits on them, something to look for. Granted, they're not going to be a lot of supplies there, but it's going to be some. And they're already going to be boxed up so they're easy to grab. I was thinking on the lines, look, if you need to grab food and water, or at least food, maybe not so much water, but food. School cafeterias usually have a supply of canned goods. Again, something to look for, where to look for it, you know, that kind of thing. You know, we talked about, you know, if you're a prepper group leader, perhaps you might want to task a team to go to the nearest pharmacy, scavenge what they have there, see what's available. You know, some of the other ideas out there, check ambulances. Sure, they might be, you know, cleaned out, but you never know what you can find unless you go and look. You could even, if you really felt the need to, and you should, just because you want to be thorough when you're doing this acquiring resources mission, would be to go and check out the grocery stores. Yes, it's absolutely true. The shelves will probably be stripped. There probably won't be anything there. But you don't know unless you go look and you check. You never know what you might find. Same thing with the dollar stores, you know, like Dollar General, Family Dollar, that kind of thing. Check it out. Granted, there might not be anything there or anything left. But unless you go to check it out, how do you know? You got to go. So that's what I'm talking about. Gary, do you have any ideas on this?
Well, I would, you're saying check the stores. I would probably be more inclined if it was already been ransacked, I'd probably check the dumpsters.
Good point. Okay.
You know, I know it sounds disgusting, but you'd be surprised if somebody will throw in a can to get rid of it so somebody else can't get it. So,
you know, it's very true. Again, Rob in Indiana, he just joined us on the video feed. And he says, you know, check construction sites. Lots of first aid kits. You know, they even have skids of bottled water. Again, you got to check these things out. Now, you were talking about having skids of bottled water. You know, you have a choice as a team leader, A, take a vehicle or not take a vehicle. Some will, some won't. It depends on how far you're going. And like I said, if you come across a skid of bottled water, you're probably, you know, you could be hard-pressed to say, look, you guys stay here and watch over it. We're going to go get a vehicle. Well, again, how far away is it? You know, how long will it take you to get there and back? You know, that it all plays into your planning and how you do it. Again, that's why
if you have a vehicle that you're going to use for that, you better make sure you have applicable parts to reach it, because you'll be raiding a wrecking yard to try to keep it going if there's nothing else left.
There's always that possibility. There's always that possibility. There's nothing wrong with scavenging the junkyards. Junkyards are in business, and they're in business because people buy those parts. A lot cheaper than they do brand new parts. It, you know, if people weren't making money on it, they wouldn't be in that business.
That's right.
It's a good point, Gary. Is not to, you know, just because it's a junkyard doesn't mean it's useless or worthless.
No, it does not. You got to kind of look at the backwards end of that scenario.
Right.
When some are trying to go to the front, you need to go through the back. You know, because everybody thinks about going to the front door. They don't think about going to the back per se, like a wrecking yard or a dumpster, or whatever. You know, as far as a first aid kit. I try to keep a fat first aid kit regardless anyway. You know, just buy a piece or two here and there every week and put it in your bag, and you'd be surprised how quick it adds up. You know, a friend of mine, he's fixing to go on a hike in Arkansas, and I said, "Hey, man, do you have something to boil water in?" He goes, "No." I said, "Here." Next thing you know, I had him set up with a bag of stuff he didn't even think about. And it just took me 2 minutes to put it together for him. He's like, "Oh, cool, dude, this is awesome." I'm like, "Well, you got to prepare for this stuff."
Yeah, this is just an exercise in training to get you thinking about different possibilities, different scenarios. It doesn't have to be a first aid kit. It could be, look, you're looking for antibiotics. You know, think of places that might have it. And again, as a training exercise, it's just that. Start brainstorming, put it out there, start talking about it, don't hold it in. Because when the time comes and you're sitting there with your leadership or your war council or whatever you want to call them, and they're saying, you know, we need these supplies, where should we look? You need to be able to sit there and speak up and say, yeah, I think I need this, I need that. Rob in Indiana again, he says nursing homes. Nursing homes is an excellent idea. Just please don't take the food away. They're still got residents there. But again, I'm serious. You know, you'd be surprised. Look, let's be honest. This is what the mentality of some of them are going to be. They're going to say, well, they're senior citizens. They're not going to live long. They don't need the food. I do. Da, da, da. You got people out there that will genuinely consider taking their food.
Oh, yes. A lot of people are all they think about themselves.
I know, exactly. And I think to be a ethical and moral prepper, you have to be able to have ethics and morals to do that. And part of that is you still have to maintain right and wrong.
Yeah, I talked to one guy, and he told me, he said, well, if crap gets too bad, I'll shoot who I gotta shoot, and I'll take what I wanna take. And I'm like, why would you do that? Because would you want your neighbors coming in and doing that to you? He's like, well, my neighbors ain't gonna do it to me because they ain't got the guts. I'm like, well, you better not come to my house, son.
See, problem you're gonna run into out there, and they're out there.
Oh yeah, they are, and there's a lot more of them than you think there is.
There's a group out there, and this clown actually charges his members like $100 a year. And that's their plan, to be marauders.
Yeah, so I've heard of groups that's what their job is to be when crap hits the fan. Their job is to keep their eyes peeled for a candlelight or whatever so they can break in, shoot whoever there's there, and take what they have so they have their fair goods instead of having to go and work for them like a normal man should have to do. You know?
And that's the issue. Now, my guess is, sure, there's probably more of them out there than what we know. But I think on the whole, in general principle, thinking that what we're having, that there are more preppers out there that are more, who have the morality not to do that. You know, Brian in He says after 3 weeks, there will be no one left in the nursing home. The staff won't be there to look after them or cook. You know, there's always that possibility. And let me ask you this then, Mr. Porky Wheel, and for those of you out there, let's say that scenario is true and you go into the nursing home, but let's say you find two or three that are still living. What do you do? Are you going to take their food, knowing full well they cannot resupply? These are what I'm talking about. These are some tough decisions, but like I said, think of this show right now as a training exercise.
In a scenario like that, if I walked in and there were still three or four older people and everybody else is dead and they was getting along trying to make it work, you couldn't do nothing but try to help them to start with. If you tried to hurt them, you'd be just shooting yourself, and you deserve to shoot yourself at that point. You know?
I agree. I think the part to being an effective prepper group is to be a prepper group that has the ethics and morals right and wrong. It's still going to apply. Yes. Things aren't grid is down. That does not mean that you become a total barbarian animal. Because
no.
Eventually, someplace, somewhere down the line, as much as some of you don't want to admit it or like the idea, the government will come back and they will start answering and they'll start asking questions. What happened to these people? Who did this? You know what? They're going to demand answers. You know, if nothing else, the government will see that it survives somehow, some way, even at the expense of the citizens. Government takes care of itself first. It always has. Check any plan that they have, and the first thing, step one, is continuity of government. That is step one. And they will come, and you know what? They may not be able to reassert their authority right away, but they will eventually. And for those that decide that we're just going to kill people at random and take what they have, you will eventually face justice. Now, karma may say you don't get to see that, but no, it will happen. And to be a good prepper, to be a moral and ethical prepper, don't do things that are wrong. Now, that we're talking about.
And it all falls back again, though. It's really how you want to be treated is how you want to be able to treat others, even in a bad scenario, because I'm going to say, like in my particular area, all our neighbors for miles around, I mean, we come together during anything that's bad happening. Everybody will help everybody anyway. So, I mean, I don't understand how somebody could be mean to people that are doing that anyway. And you bring a good point up. You got to have morals behind what you're doing.
Would it be moral or ethical? And
both.
To this. This is where I'm going with it. To leave them there or to take them back to your area of operations, to your bug out location.
Well, to me, if they was transportable, even if you was just taking them back to your area, even if you knew they was going to die, at least give them comfort until they died. You know, I think that's who wants to be left alone to die in that scenario anyway?
I agree.
Somebody to, you know.
Okay. And now we have Rob, once again, just opening that can of worms and digging in deeper and deeper. And here's the hard question he asked. You go into a nursing home and there's a few stragglers and say they're close to a vegetative state. Is it ethical to put them down?
No. If they're in a vegetative state, nature will take its course.
I would, you know, Gary, I'm going to have to agree with you on that, and I'm not saying I wouldn't think about it. But what right do I have to make that determination for that person?
Well, look, I'm going to be honest. I had a sister that was in a vegetative state for 18 years, and when it come time for her ending, that's what you had to do was sit there and not feed her anymore. You know, it's sad. Don't get me wrong, it's sad, but you can't keep somebody alive that's been that way for years because they're not going to know it's coming anyway. it's a fairly quick, and it's done, you know. And you there?
I'm here. I'm just
So yeah, I would, you know, if they're not there and they're in a vegetated state, I'd let nature take its course, you know. That's all you can do.
All right. Now look, people. One of the rules to this is this. There are no wrong answers, except for doing nothing. So they hand you a list, go find these items. You can put whatever you want on the list, but please tell us what's on your list and where you would go to look for it. You know, we talk about the food, water, and we talk about some of the construction sites, the schools. What is it? You know, where else might you be able to find food? And here's something that some of you aren't going to like, but I'm going to put it out there. Because, first of all, it's going to be dangerous to your team, but again, you need to check it out. And mine is this. You're going to have to go in to what might appear to be an abandoned house. Mainly because you don't know what's in there. You might find people. You might not. You might find, you know, a whole family that decided that they'd rather, shall we say, leave this planet on their own terms. But then again, how many of your neighbors or friends that do you know that are preppers? And what would happen if, like, one of your friends that you know are preppers, but yet they're not at their house, and you're now 3 months into this critical event? Do you go to their house and grab their supply catch? No.
Well, I would say yes. I would say yes, because in fact, if they come back, they'll come to your place anyway.
Maybe. You know, and how many of those families actually know they're preppers? Maybe mom is the one that's been storing stuff and dad has no clue what mom's been doing at the grocery store with a bunch of coupons every week for the last 15 years.
Exactly.
I mean, or dad doing it and mom has no clue that dad's been secreting cases of food, you know, here and there around whatever. I mean, again, you could run into a situation where you might have people who aren't preppers, but they're armed. Do you force the issue, or do you just say, "Nah, you know what, they're there, move on to the next house"? And if you do move on to the next house, how do you want to mark that house so that way you know, and people and other teams in your prepper group, like team two or team three, know that you've checked that house already? You should be able to mark it so you're not duplicating the same effort over and over again. No, these are the little things we have to talk about. And like I said, think of this little episode as some training. Gary obviously has thought about this. I know Tim has thought about this, and I wish he was able to call in and spend about 10, 15 minutes with us, because I know he wanted to do this in the worst way. He's been waiting for it. Anyways, or what about this? You know, we got Porky Whale in Northern Ireland. You know, he's subject to the Crown's National Health Service, or National Health System. You know,
be thankful if crap hits the fan that we're over here, not over there.
Yeah, he knows that though,
and hope he gets over here before that happens.
I would hope so, and I think somewhere in the back of his mind, it probably is. I think one thing I want you all to understand, most according to Lou in the UK and Porky Wheel in Northern Ireland, have said that their fellow citizens have just given up. They've given up. They've surrendered to the government. If the government says from now on you can only wear blue shoes, they would say okay, and they'd all wear blue shoes. Not even going to fight it, say, gee, I'd like to wear green ones. Nope, you got to wear blue. Okay. So you got people like Porky Will. You got people like Lou who don't.
They keep the red pair of shoes in the living room.
Exactly. And what do you? We got people here in this country that have basically also given up. Whatever reason, don't care what it is. Some of them have just said, you know what, whatever the government wants to do, I just don't care anymore. They want to do this, I don't care, go ahead. You should vote, nope, I just don't care anymore, go ahead. Whatever they want to do, they're going to do it anyways. Can't stop them, can't change it. And to a certain extent, I believe they're probably right. I hate to say it.
I think you're hitting the nail on the head on that as well.
I just I don't like to think that way. I look at some of the people that I know, I'm acquainted with. I wouldn't call them friends, but you know, people I'm acquainted with. And I say to myself, they've given up. Those are the people that will be in the FEMA camps. There's another one. What if there's a FEMA camp nearby? Do you go begging for food or medicine from them? Do you? I mean that's a question.
Well, I would try to stay far away from that one.
Well,
but that's just me.
Look, I think at some point in time, depending on if the government's able to reassert control and authority, there'll be Camp FEMA will not be the place to be, because I think as the time between the government coming in, reasserting its authority, setting it up again, and the time after the critical event, that space of time there opens up a window where those that are in charge of the safety of the camp and control of the camp will soon become masters of that camp. And if you,
yeah, I think it could be kind of like the Superdome was during Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
They had people raped, killed. I mean, just awful stuff took place in there, and they couldn't do nothing about it. They was all trapped in this big building together. And when it was all cleared and done, they could open the door, huh?
That's what happened at the Superdome.
Yep.
And the government tried to suppress that story. They got out.
Yeah, so we seen it firsthand because we live just further north of those, you know. And
right, right.
Local media did cover it. But some of the horror stories that come from there was unbelievable. And that's what you automatically thought of. This is what a FEMA camp would probably be like. That's how I look at it. Or it would become a concentration camp, one of the two.
Either way, it's not the place. I don't think it's the place you want to be. As a matter of fact, I think it's the place you want to try to be as far away as possible.
Correct.
Because I think at some point in time, you reach a point of diminishing returns, where in the beginning, you know, they're handing out food and water, MREs, supplies to everybody that comes along. At some point in time, those supplies start to dwindle, and they won't be quite so giving them out so freely.
I would rather kill my own wild hog than eat MRE, but that's
right. Now, Porky Wheel, you have nothing to say about Camp FEMA because you don't have one. You have your own government there. I don't think they have a FEMA camps in Northern Ireland. I'm sure they have something else. So,
and to be fair, they do have FEMA camps because I know where one is just outside of Alexandria.
There's
that's
a lot of,
exactly what it is. Do what?
Look, I'm not knocking FEMA. What I'm trying to say is this, and I've said it before on this show, and I'm going to say it again in case somebody, you know, either knew or forgot. FEMA has the impossible task of having to prep for 315 million people.
That's right.
Most people can't even prep for themselves. You know, and I'm not, you know, I don't, I think FEMA's idea is out there is probably a noble idea, but it's almost impossible for them to do it, trying to prep for 315 million people.
Well, I mean, it's all they can do to organize something in the neighborhood.
And you're right. And it takes everything that they are just to do that. I mean, look, we've seen FEMA in action a couple times. And again, you know, it's one thing for you to show up with a checkbook writing out checks to people. I get that. I understand that. I don't have a problem with it. The problem is, what if the government is unable to reassert itself at the time or unable to get people there? Let's see. Hey. Ho, ho, ho. Stop the presses. Wow. I don't believe that. Hold on. This requires an EAAS radio alert. Hold one. All right. And the reason I'm doing that, our good friend Joe H. from the tyranny state of Illinois, haven't heard from him for months. I'm glad he's here. I want to say, hi, Joe. I'm glad you're here, buddy. I was starting to wonder if I'd ever hear back from you again. So, yes. But, you know, Joe always has some good ideas. You know, Joe lives in a small town, kind of. So he has a different perspective than, say, myself or Gary, who lives off the grid, or Porky Wheel, who lives in a socialist country. Some aspects of capitalism, but very little. But yes, I'm glad Joe is here. Yes. He's here. So what we're talking about, you know, you got FEMA trying to prep for 315 million people. You got most people can't even prep for a family of four, much less two or three. I know those that listen to this show have made the conscious decision and an effort to try to prep. And you know how difficult it is just for your immediate family. Can you imagine trying to do it for 315 million people? I'm just putting it out there, people. You know, I'm just putting it out there. I'm not saying it's bad. What I'm saying is it's a damn near impossible task that FEMA's been tasked with. And like, you know, Gary said, you know, there are FEMA camps that are already pre-positioned and ready to go. But is that going to be enough? Will it ever be enough? And can they ever keep it really resupplied? You know, that's the thing with camp. You know, once you check in, you may not be able to check out again. And if you check in, you know, you're dependent on them for food, safety, water, medical, whatever. And again, as those supplies get used up, are they able to going to be able to resupply? For example, with the floods we're having here in my neighborhood, as I told you last week, they were tapping into the Army Corps of Engineers depot in Wheaton, Illinois, just to get sandbags. And the last I heard, they were down to 10,000. And that was last week. I'd be willing to bet that supply has been tapped out, unless, of course, they're getting resupply from somewhere else, and I don't know the answer to that. You would think so, yeah. You would hope so, yeah. Still, you know, it's important to know where these things are. And speaking of which, you need to know where the civilian fallout shelters are in your town, if you even have any anymore. On the other hand, a lot of times what these governments have done, local governments have done with the, and if you're not sure what I'm talking about, you're a new prepper, you're young, you know, us old guys and gals, we remember the big yellow triangle. It said, you know, it's surrounded on, it was on a black background. Was it a black background? No, yellow background and a black triangle. And it either said CD, Civil Defense, and that building was marked as a bomb shelter. Many times as the years have passed, they've just walled off that area, locked up whatever it was. Once ever in there, it was still in there. So there's always a possibility there's still food and supplies of some nature in there. Something to, you got to check out again. And a lot of times, the governments took those signs off the buildings. So unless you've got an idea what you're looking for, it might be worthwhile. Now, if you people live in the city, like, for example, you live in Chicago, you go down to those big old marble buildings, you start looking in the basement, find something. I'm almost sure of it. I'm almost positive you will find something in that basement.
Unless you're flooded.
You know, it could happen. It happened, some about 30 years ago. That flood, the Chicago River got into one of the old trolley. It was years ago, back. Like last century, they built these little trolley lines underneath the Chicago River that ran from building to building, bank to bank, so businesses could move goods, money, whatever, in a safe, secure fashion. Unfortunately, even the old Marshall Fields building had it. Unfortunately, what happened was, over time, one of the tunnels gave in, the river rushed in and flooded out a bunch of different businesses. So, yeah. But be that as it may, you still have to check it out. Even if you're a small town, I would say check out the government buildings.
If they've already been abandoned, that's the first one you want to hit anyway.
I was just going to say that, especially if the government has either ceased to exist or ceased to function, you might be able to get in there and take a look around. And I want to tell you something. I want you all to be prepared. I want us all to be on the same page here. No amount of food and water is worth your life. Okay? There will always be food and water to be had. You just have to find it. There's no reason to have to die for food and water.
Just have to think logistically.
Right. Well, that's not to say that people aren't going to come and try and take it from you. You do what you got to do to keep what's yours. My point is, don't put yourself into a dangerous situation looking for it if you don't have to. And it's already going to be a dangerous scenario and environment out there anyways. Why sit there and, tempt fate, so to speak? Instead, we're only talking about 2 weeks after a critical event or, say, 3 months, 90 days after a critical event. So it's something to think about. We're just talking about those, I guess if you wanted to extrapolate, you could go, say, let's go 6 months. Let's go 9 months. Let's go a year afterwards. What's functioning? What isn't? What won't be? Where do I look for a year later? Where would I look for food and water?
Yeah, because, if you think about it, the first month, I think, would be the most devastating. Mm-hmm. Because after the first month, that's when all the wrath is going to pretty much have to take place. And there'll be a lot less people after that first month.
I agree with you. I agree 100%.
I think after your first month, your odds of survival are going to be a lot better. Especially if you have to go out and hunt for supplies after the first month.
I agree with that assessment. Whether you're going, 2 weeks after, and don't forget, after that 2 weeks, you're going to have a lot of people to deal with. As time goes on, people will either settle into the routine of what's become the new normal, or they'll join and make their own communities, that kind of thing. It becomes a bit more stable as time goes on. Does it make it any less dangerous? No. Again, until that time, such time as that government's able to reassert its control. And like I said, first thing out of any emergency government plan is continuity of government. They are going to ensure that government survives at the expense of the people. That's just, I hate to say it, but that includes every government on the planet. First thing is they're worried about is their own, the government is worried about its own survival. That's why.
Well, I guess it's going to be no different than, there's no difference than me and you are. When it goes down, we're going to see to our families provided for first.
You beat me to it. That's exactly what I was going to say. And again, it depends on how devastating the critical event is. How soon, how quick can they reassert quality or control and authority? Where could they do it? Where would they do it? Could they do it at all? I don't know. And there's something else to think about as well. You could end up dealing with our own military. Me? I don't see Look, okay, you Patriots out there are going to throw a fit when I say this. But I think if you take a step back and truly think it out and think through it. Okay, here we go. I'm going to get hate mail for this. I just know it. But I'm going to put it out there. I think any militia unit that deems to try to go toe-to-toe with a U.S. military unit, you're doomed to failure. They will always have resupply. They will always have the advantage in firepower and support.
You're right.
Sure, I mean, if you're a militia unit, and I'm not saying they're bad, what I'm saying is this. You might win a skirmish or two here or there, or might be able to ambush, but eventually, guess what? They can replenish their ranks, and they will. They can replenish their supplies. You know, it's not the fact, we're not talking tactics and strategy. We're talking about logistics. Logistics is what wins. Logistics and the will to use the full extent of those logistics. And that means manpower. It means food. It means water, ammunition, whatever it takes. They have the advantage. I am not saying militias are bad. What I'm saying is I would not encourage any type of a, toe-to-toe type slugfest with them, because I think in the long run you're going to end up on the short end of the stick, just because they have all kinds of things to call on for support. Militia units, well, not so much. Unless your militia unit happens to deal with combat aircraft, okay. You might have a better chance, but most don't. Most are just, small squad actions. It's nothing, You know what I mean? Well, I'm sure, like I said, I'll get hate mail for this. I know it. I just know I'm going to. So where else would you look? We talked about schools. We talked about nursing homes. We talked about dollar stores. We talked about grocery stores. Where else might you be able to look for food, water, or medical supplies? Anyone. Give me a call, 516-453-9389. Gary and I are just about out of ideas, I think. I don't know. Gary, you got anything else you might think of?
Well, I was thinking like any kind of fast food restaurant, but...
Isn't that most of that stuff, though? Most of the stuff, when I worked for Burger King many, many, many moons ago, where I was a junior Whopper master, I might add, we had very little canned stuff. It was all frozen.
Well, at that particular point, you might be hunting for coffee or something,
Okay, there you go. All right, good enough. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But you know what? All right, you're on to something. Perhaps maybe not fast food, but what about just your local diner or local restaurant? That isn't fast food. They're bringing stuff.
If you have condiments, you have a food source to a certain degree,
Right? No, I agree. And that's something else. Again, you may have to go check it out. You're going to have to go in there and look and see. And hey, all restaurants have one thing. They all have it: salt.
Yep.
They all have salt. If you got salt, you got it. It's these little things. Again, it may not sound like a lot, but it's absolutely crucial. If you have salt, you can preserve food and meat.
You got to tear open 1,000 packets of salt to get a quart.
So if that, so be it. If that's what it takes, so be it. Hopefully, it won't be that way. But again, it's something to think about. Let's see, anybody calling in? Nope, just you and me, Garrett. No one else wants to talk to us. No one wants to add to this fascinating conversation we're having. I'm surprised. And no, there is
no... I tell you something people probably wouldn't rate for the right reason, so it would be a good place to check, and that would be little nightclubs. And the reason why people would already rate them for the whiskey or beer, but it's the stuff that they might have in the back as far as, again, salt, chips, whatever, you know.
Yeah. You know, you'd be surprised how much food can really survive during a long period of time. I mean, they most, you know, there's this move towards using less preservatives in food, but there are still foods out there that have lots of preservatives in there. You know, that's, you know, keep it. Don't believe me? Look at best use date on the side of the can or the package. You know, it's something to think about. You got to check it. I would check, you know, like I said, we've checked, I would stay away from hospitals. Justin in Sacramento put that out. Hospitals would not be a good place to go because everybody's going there. You're sick, you're injured. People are going to be stressed out beyond belief.
And I think that'd probably be the first areas that would get shut down as far as, I think they'd become more controlled, kind of like a FEMA camp at that point.
It would be a controlled access point, no argument. I think you're absolutely right. It'd be controlled access. But again, that's not a place I would go. It's tempting, but not advisable. Could you? I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying that would be low on the list, depending where we are in the timeline after the critical event. If it's, you know, 9 months, 6-9 months afterwards, go look. What's the worst that could happen? Is it still under control? If it's not, go look.
Yeah, if it's an empty building by that point, it'd be a perfect place to scope out at that particular point once it's empty.
You know, being in a hospital is not a bad idea. Most hospitals are going to have a generator.
Mm-hmm.
If you got the fuel, why not go stay in the hospital?
Why I set off a wrecking yard, too, because you pull alternators, they got batteries, you probably puncture tanks and get low gas, that kind
right.
of thing.
No, it's a good point. You know, I'm just putting it out, you know, and I think it's very important to what you said, and that is, initially after a critical event, you're looking at probably a controlled access point. Is it like a FEMA camp? Maybe. Or it could be, you know, here's a Band-Aid for your boo-boo, get out. You know, they're not, you know.
I think some of your smaller hospitals would probably go under just as fast as everything else. The bigger hospitals would probably have more hang on as far as, like we were discussing earlier. But
right.
Some of these small towns, they just have like a walk-in clinic type scenario. And, you know, if everybody flees the country, so to speak, and on the run, those places will be what to hit for medical supplies because they have a lot of giveaway samples there.
Right, right.
And somebody found a drop of package of Tylenol or a sewing suture or something that's left in a drawer, anything, you know.
No, I get
the point.
Porky Wilson, look at local or neighbors' farms, as they could be abandoned or maybe the residents could have checked out. Absolutely possible. You know, it all depends on where you're at, what the situation is, but to be a good leader, a good resource acquirer, to be a good scrounger, you have to check everything because you never know what it is you're going to come across. Now, I would have never thought about going to the construction sites, but what Rob said, hey, they've got pallets of water there sometimes. Yeah, oh, I could use a pallet of water. Could you? Of course you could. The question is, how do you travel with your pallet of water? You know, how do you get it from point A to point B? You know, again, these are things that you need to discuss with your within your prepper group. A scenario that needs to be worked out, an idea, a contingency plan, if you will. I mean,
and see, you're almost on the discussion of it'd almost be like an urban survival scenario.
Yeah.
You got to think about what's available around your area that's going to be the first thing to go, that's going to be the first thing you're going to check.
Right. You know, I would imagine a good prepper group commander, a good prepper group leader would be already have a lot of these ideas sketched out, thought through, has talked about it with proper group leadership, talked over ideas, details. Have this stuff ready to go, because the last thing you want to do, try to do this planning on the move, on the run, under pressure, under the gun, under stress. Now, because when you do that, you're bound to make mistakes. You're bound to forget something. And it won't be intentional.
And also, you want to make sure your bug out bag is halfway stocked to start with, as far as supplies you need for retrieving with. You know, whether it's a screwdriver or a pair of pliers. You know, just some of the simplest stuff that you don't think nothing of could really save your life in the end. If you have, you'd be surprised what a good pair of needle nose pliers and a screwdriver will do. You know.
You know, I know a lot of guys carry the that multi-tool with them. There's nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
And it's that, a multi-tool. I know a guy, true story, his job is he goes to all the big concert venues and he sets up the stages for all the music acts coming in and out of Chicago at different venues. What's his primary tool he has on him all the time? It's a multi-tool. Yes, he has other tools, but he always has that multi-tool on him. And if it's good enough to go set up a concert stage, wouldn't it be good enough for you to carry as a, you know, in your go bag?
I mean, even my kids have them needle nose plier multi-tool pocket knives. Mm. Every one of them have.
You know, exactly.
And they use them on their bicycles and everything else, you know.
Right. So.
And if you're in a town scenario, a good bicycle will be a good hot commodity to have, because you're not always guaranteed to find gas. And if you have a few bicycle tire repair kits and a good bike hand pump, you can keep that bike going a long time.
And you know what? Mountain bikes will be all over. They're all over the place now. You could acquire them very easily. And you're absolutely right.
And they're not really that expensive if you're on a tight income, you can save up and buy one, you know, because I've seen some pretty nice bikes for under $100.
You know what? Something you need to realize, and remember this, guys, my prepper friends, is this. That mountain bike can go places your truck or car probably can't go. Think about some of the rough terrain. If you got a bike, you can probably go there with it. And because
between a bike and a set of zip ties, you can put a lot of stuff on that bike to ride with you.
You can. Absolutely right. You can put it. You can attach a cart to the damn bike if you had to.
Oh yeah.
And you don't need gas. All you need is a little leg muscle, and you're all good to go.
And plenty of water, and a little salt, and some food.
There you go. And you got that salt at the fast food restaurant you just checked. So there you go.
Well, actually, believe it or not, even in my, I got I call it my prepper bag, but it's actually a little ammo can. And I have coffee packets, sugar packets, salt packets, pepper packets on top of toilet paper, knives, fire starters, you know, everything to make a fire and to cook, first aid kit, all in one can. And you're surprised how often it gets used. You know, you go to a church event and a kid cuts your fingers, they always come up to me, hey, you got a Band-Aid? Yeah, I know I got a Band-Aid.
Good point.
With the sport, so, and have a leaf, Tylenol, stuff like that. And you'd be surprised how long you can kind of stay going, you know, especially if you have any survival skill, whether it's catching a brim and cleaning and cooking over a fire to eat it for supper. I mean, you got to have something to do with it.
It can be done. It can be done.
And that can, and that ammo can, probably weighs 10 pounds. So if you got a bicycle, you can put it on the back and strap it down. You've got a lot of gear in that box you can put in there for the weight.
There's a lot. And if you've done it right, and you check to make sure that rubber seal on the lid of the ammo can is still
good. It'll float.
Guess what? It's watertight. Good stuff. Keep it dry. That's what I'm talking about. I'm trying to think, if there's any place else that we could have checked for food or water. Ah, what about childcare centers?
I really don't think so. I could be wrong.
I don't know. But to me, it's something you'd want to check out.
I mean, if you had one right next to you, you could, you know.
That's what I'm saying. It's just something to check on. You may go in there and find, you know, there's not a lot of them I could be able to use here. And off you go. But you never know. You got to check. You know, I'm just, just thinking to myself, think about this. You're walking down the street.
Now, if you had a small child that is still in diapers, I would say that would be a place to check if you needed your diapers.
Yep, you beat me to it. Man, we must be on the same wavelength tonight because we're thinking.
Or if you needed a wet one.
Oh yeah, no. I'm serious. No, you're right. Actually, you should have those baby wipes.
Diaper rash cream.
You should have those already in into your supply catch already. They're cheap as all. And it's not just for babies, guys. You can actually give yourself a sponge bath with a couple of those baby wipes, and then instead of throwing them away, put them into a Ziploc bag and use them as toilet paper later on.
That's right.
So and I've always said, laugh if you want, but I'll tell you what, baby wipes are one of the most useful things you can have. And you could
believe it or not, you can find hand sanitizer. And, people think hand sanitizer you wash your hands with or whatever for antibacteria, but you also can use it for fire starter.
Okay. Now, Porky Will says he's got a Coke bottling plant close to him. All right, Porky, you're going to go in that bottling plant. What are you looking for? What
he
item?
Drink a lot of Coke.
Well, he'd be jacked up, Okay, he says solar panels and batteries from the highway road signs. That's from Rob. That's a good idea, buddy. Well, let's put this.
Well, and that falls again at the wrecking yard. You know how many vehicles now that come out to get junk that have built-in inverters in them? A lot.
Really?
Okay. Yes. A lot of your Toyota pickups have built-in inverters in the back of the truck. You pick up a receptacle cover, and you got a 110 receptacle right there in the back of the truck. A lot of vehicles that way. And I also made that video on the inverter for you, too, and I sent it to the CNR page, too.
Did you post it on the group page?
Yes, I did.
You get a gold star. And because you did that, you also get, as a special treat, this.
Well, I'm sorry it took me so long, but I had to find one that didn't cost anything so I could prove a point that you could do it for free.
Well, and you're right here. Okay. Porky Will says that they also have they do the bottled water at the Coca-Cola bottling plant. Absolutely true.
They do.
They, as do breweries, by the way. They use lots of clean water in the brewery. Especially if it's like a brewer, like here in the United States. It might be Budweiser, Miller, Coors. They use lots and lots of fresh, clean water. So it's something to look for. Plus, if you could grab anything there, you could always use the beer, any beer or alcohol you find, use that as a bartering item. Not for personal consumption, but for a bartering item.
Well, and also like a small bottle of whiskey, if you had it in your first aid kit and you didn't have alcohol, you could use the whiskey back in the active.
You could. All right. We're down to my last 55 seconds. I want to say thank you to Gary for calling in, buddy. I appreciate it. Thank you for your help and your ideas and your conversation tonight, my friend. Thank you.
No problem. Always enjoy it.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you. All right. And then, of course, I've got I want to thank Porky Wheel, Joe, Stacy, and Rob for checking in tonight on the video Facebook live feed. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for helping me out. I sure need it. So, my proper Patriot friends out there, I say to you this. Be safe, be alert, and be vigilant. Keep prepping, keep stocking. I'll be back on Wednesday night with a new episode. So thank you again. Check me out. Appreciate it. I'm John Jeffers for the Contra Radio Network saying thank you and good night.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine & More. And more.